dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 236 and I'm still filled with tricks. How y'all doing? It's your host, Ify Whitey Way, and in the booth with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have America's favorite critic, Alonzo Duralde, the Christmas Daddy himself. What's good?
Ify, I'm going to assume that you mean you're full of tricks, the cereal. But, I really don't want to know anything more than that. What's good with me? This is dumb, but it was great. It's okay. I admit it, and I understand it. L.A. never gets, like, cold. Like, I know you're y'all are listening in Michigan or whatever. Like, the idea that we're even allowed to use that word, you're rolling your eyes at. But it does, like, chill out a bit, and you do get some days that are nicely cool. And my apartment, you know, building was built in the 50s. It has, I think, whatever insulation is like old wadded up pages from Variety. And so, you know, the bedroom in my apartment got kind of cold this afternoon, and I took a nap there, and I did not want to get up. It had been so long since I'd had a good sleep in a cold room, and it was just like I kept hitting that button, like no, another 10 minutes. It was just delicious. Like I'm a nap connoisseur, and this was one of the great ones.
A good nap. I have to say, because we're on Zoom so we can see each other, Alonzo popped into our Zoom wearing his traditional flannel and also a knit cap. And like your full lumberjack vibe has never been stronger.
Look, I took a shower before going to bed last night and my hair has just not been responding to anything today. So hat you get.
It's adorable.
Oh, you know someone who is also adorable? Well, it's the queen of the Midwest, producer extraordinaire. You know, the one who holds the key to all of our dreams. Drea Clark, what's good?
If you hadn't taken that adorable segue I gave you so easily, I would have been truly disappointed. So I thank you.
Thank you.
Nope, just begging for compliments over here.
Gone fishing.
What's good with me is a free web app. I'm 100 years old, as you know. I'm also timeless, evergreen. So I feel like this will sound like an ad, but it's free. And also, we are not getting paid. But I've recently discovered this thing called Milanote. And I am someone who I live and die by a good to-do list. I'm always enjoying those. Milanote also has the ability, like, you can pull photos in, you can share your Milanote page with someone else, and you can both, like, put notes on different things. And then I realized they have all of these templates. So, like, they have movie templates where it's, like, character design, and it's built up, and it's, like, put your character lookbook, your character attributes, the scenes that you're, like, there's all these built-in templates that are genuinely useful for different creative endeavors, possibly non-creative endeavors. I just don't know. I so rarely undertake any of those. But anyway, I'm enjoying it heartily. Again, it's free and I get nothing if you check out this app. But it's good for me.
But, you know, we can start the campaign. You know, we're going to let them know.
Yes.
Bring Dre the bucks.
The face of Milanote.
I want a cut of every free download.
Yes.
Every single one.
25%.
Yes, indeed. Now, look, we oftentimes have amazing guests on this pod. And guess what? Today's episode is no different. I mean, this is someone who is amazing. Doctor is before their name. So, you know, they're definitely way cooler, smarter than me. It is none other than returning guest, Dr. Nancy Wong Yoon. If you remember, she hung out with us for Mulan. She's a sociologist and author of Real Inequality, Hollywood Actor and Racism. And if you haven't bought that book yet, what you waiting on? Go and get it right now, okay? What's good?
Hi, so good Nancy. To be back with everyone.
Of
and
course.
To talk about better things than Mulan, actually. Like, really, like, so many things. Actually, what's good is that Asian American films have gotten way better.
Yeah.
In terms of, I think, the offerings and studio backing. I mean, Asian American films have been good, but now I feel like there's a true renaissance going on, right? So seriously, from Mulan to now, wow, what a great place to be able to talk about Asian Americans. So
all that, and we don't have any worry, hopefully, of having to bring up the potential genocide by the fact of the studio involvement. So a real bonus.
Yes.
Hulu announced a June date for Fire Island, which is one of the two movies I'm basically just living for this year. So can't wait for that. Andrew Ahn's latest. It's a queer Asian Jane Austen themed rom-com starring Bowen Yang and Joel Kim Booster. Sign me up.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're doing it. Absolutely. We'll just say it now.
We're so doing an episode. Doing yes. Movie. No question.
Yeah. I think that's a easy peasy pick right there.
Speaking of which, Iffy, what's good?
What's good with me is, you know, no one can see it because in today's picture, I will be a bird. But you might have noticed that I am in a different area.
I did.
So, yeah, I lived in a house where the bottom unit that basically was kind of like the basement was rented out, and my buddy was living here, and then he found love through a party of mine, so of course I'm taking credit for it. He moved in with his partner, and so and they were thinking of not renting it out anyway, and I was like, well, can I just pay you more and just use it as an office? So I'm a guy with an office now.
That is exciting.
Yeah, yes. But it's like, since it's detached from the house, like if it looks like I'm looking at my phone, I'm looking at this dystopian camera in my daughter's room to make sure she's all right.
I was going
to
ask, who's watching your child?
Thanks to Jeff Bezos, he has those cameras that you can connect and see, and you can talk to him. So I was like, if you need me, just talk to the camera and I will.
It's funny because it's not in the general ethos of our show to give a thank you to Jeff Bezos.
I know, right?
So what an exciting the opposite twist. Yeah.
I heard the rumor. Was it on here that we heard the rumor that Jeff Bezos created Prime Video because he wanted to go to Hollywood parties?
Oh,
that's what I heard. I heard that like he wasn't able to get into like the cool Hollywood parties, so he wanted to create his own like, you know, studio. Platform. Yeah, his own studio where he can like go to all these Hollywood parties, which I'm like, I get. I mean, it's another place I can like sell stuff to. So shout out, I guess, but like,
you know, once you've had those canapes at the Beverly Hilton, you just, you know, keep coming back for more.
All right, let's jump in because this is going to be a fun show. So we're giving Coconatus After Yang the maximum film treatment, and later we'll get quizzed on one named filmmakers.
Oh,
but first, it's time for Itadic, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we go through news segments and answer the fated question, is this important and do we care? First up, Zoe Kravitz was told not to audition for The Dark Knight because she was too quote-unquote urban. Right now, she's starring as Catwoman in the newest, grittiest Batman reboot, but in an interview with The Guardian, Kravitz said that she was told she was too quote-unquote urban to even read for a part in The Dark Knight, aka the last gritty Batman reboot. She actually talked about this experience back in 2015, too, in an interview with Nylon magazine. But now that she's landed a leading role in a Batman film, her story has a new resonance. Is this important? Do you care?
Go ahead, Alonso.
Well, no, it's two things. First of all, the fact that you wouldn't have Zoe Kravitz audition for anything, right? Lucky you, that you would not go there. But second of all, urban, is that the euphemism you're going to hide behind in 2015 or whatever? Come on.
That was a huge one. I hate the term urban so much, and I'm not even the person that bears the brunt of that, right?
Right.
But whenever I hear that, like, there's been countless festival films that have been pitched to me as urban, and then I'll literally walk in and be like, you understand what an urban setting is? This is like a farm story that has black farmers. Like, I
you
feel
know,
like
it's urban. You
it's
know,
literally it's cool. Rural. This is straight up rural. And the idea of using the shorthand of urban, it's one of those things that's like offensive and such an exciting array of, I'm like, first off, do you think only people of color live in cities? And also, do you think people of color only live in cities?
Well, just, or that they don't get what you're actually doing, you know? Like, it's such a weird dog whistle, and it's like, frankly, like, just look, be blatant if you're going to be this gross about it, but to try and hide it behind, like, some sort of demographic terminology, it's like, what are we even doing here?
I laughed today because they were talking about casting for God of War. And people were like, who would you like to see cast as Kratos it's not a remake, but the TV movie adaptation. And someone was like, why not Christopher Judge? He's an actor. He voices the character. He's built like Kratos. And someone was like, I respect him. He's all this, but you know, he's not, you know, the right type. And someone's like, you mean like a Greek god? And he goes, yeah, no, someone said Greek gods aren't real. And they're like, but Greece is a real place. I'm like, yeah, but it's not, what are you doing? Like people, but it's been this
qualifier. That's the same as when Idris Elba was cast.
I was going to say, these people are still mad about Heimdall.
Yeah.
It's always funny to see that take. And, you know, it's so funny because I think the most disappointing part about this is I can't even like read this and begin to even like know where it came from, because agents are so full of shit and they say dumb shit like this. Casting agents say dumb shit like this. Directors say dumb shit like this. Because I know the quotes that I don't know if it came directly from Chris Nolan. I think it was probably a casting director of some kind or the director's assistant. And I'm like, yeah, any of the above could say something like that.
When I interviewed actors from my book and my study, a lot of the Black actors talked about code words like urban, ghetto. Sometimes they just say straight out black and attitude. all sorts of horrible code things that, well, immediately people would know what that meant. Right. So for Latinx, it was like spicy, spicy Latin. And actually for Asian, would just be like, could you do that more Asian? Meaning do it with an accent.
With an accent.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, sassy is that thrown around in there too.
Yeah. For black
and
women.
And the reverse of all this is, I know for a fact, Zoe Kravitz has also talked about both how she's benefited from colorism, but then also been like held back from black roles because she's light skinned. And so like, it's just this damned if you do nonsense. As she is currently the Catwoman, which of course I'm going to call her as she's in the Batman. One presumes it's gotten a little better for her. And hopefully it's gotten a little better for those coming up now.
Because certainly if any movie series has been, you know, bucolic and rural and pastoral, it's the Batman movies.
Yes.
Don't want anything urban in there. Heavens no.
Gotham is not urban.
It's just one meadow after another.
Yeah.
Speaking of one meadow after another, Disney, you are letting us down. Perhaps you've heard about the Florida bill that prevents grade school teachers from talking about sexual orientation and gender identity in school. It's being called the Don't Say Gay Bill. Well, it came out this week that Disney has given a lot of money to Republicans in the Florida legislature who have gone on to support the bill. And when this was brought to the exec's attention, Disney CEO Bob Chapek talked a lot about the ways the company stands by the LGBTQ+ community, but has opted not to make any official statement opposing the bill, instead saying that Disney will fight discrimination by, quote, producing inspiring content, unquote. Is this important? Do you care?
Fuck those guys. Mm-hmm. This makes me so mad. I mean, there's so much right now that like you, I feel like I'm constantly on that thread of infuriated. It's not even a word. Infurious. I'm constantly furious Furiosa. And heartbroken. Like, there's so much stuff coming up against gay kids, trans kids. Like, it's so ugly and pointed and harmful, and I don't understand it. And I get that sort of flames on the side of my face, shaking rage, and feel very impotent, which is a great way to feel on a weekday. But this whole thing with Disney, like, F your face. Like, they would gladly take money and do from so many gay families, gay viewers, and that they'll be like, oh, but remember that one time in like Beauty and the Beast, and there's sort of an allusion to two men kissing? Like, fuck off. You like rode the coattails of that. Sorry, I F-bombed twice on that one.
Hey, look, hey, this is the show for that. Here. Yeah.
Look, in the annals of tone-deaf corporate responses, I think, yes, we did back these really horrible anti-gay legislatures, but we produced Modern Family has to rank as one of the very worst.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny because, you know, all of the discourse that I've just been seeing come out of it is this, like, you know, it's one of the things I hate about online is everyone, like, these armchair intellectuals who think like they get it. They're like, well, yeah, because, you know, in capitalism, you donate to both sides. And I was like, yeah, we know that we're not, but it doesn't make it right. You know, like just because you think you've figured out what they're doing doesn't mean that it's like I've said it before. And funny enough, I said it back with in the Mulan episode where Disney probably does have the money to shoulder and big dog, but they never do it. And I was actually talking about it this weekend when we were kind of talking about something like this, where it's like, capitalism is just a industry of male egos. And if Warner Brothers was like, yeah, we support gay people, unlike Disney, because they don't have the balls, I guarantee you the next day Disney will shut down anything, would start showing all the gay films in China, wouldn't care, all because Warner Brothers talks shit. But because there's no ego at hand and it's just money, they don't care. And they're just going to try and play both sides. And what we're saying is, we know you have the pockets to make a stand. You are just choosing not to.
They not only have the pockets to make a stand, there's no world where they're going to take a hit. Like, do you think all the mouth-breathing bigots out there are going to stop watching their movies or going to their theme parks? They are not.
Can, like, we talk about how often these, like, Republican talking heads try to boycott hot people in Hollywood because of this and that, but they're still watching SNL. They're still watching all this stuff. It's like, yeah, no, we're talented and funny. And, you know, who y'all got? What, Tim Allen, Kid Rock? It's a small...
But tragically, Kevin Sorbo out.
Oh, the heavens, yes. Tragically, the reverse is true. I think that, like, you know, as horrifyingly, you know, tone deaf and blind as Disney is being about this very topic, I'm sure the gays who love the theme parks are still going to go to the theme parks, and they're still going to go to the Marvel movies, and they're still going to, you know, like, subscribe to Disney Plus and all that stuff. So it's like, unfortunately, there's no threat for them because, yeah, these boycotts never happen. They have us by the balls because we just love this garbage that they give us so much. They're like the McDonald's of entertainment. But, you know,
the Chick-fil-A of entertainment.
For that matter. Yeah, that's what they've become now. Yeah. But, like, you know, at the same time, you know, they unfortunately, because, well, it boils down to what's more important to you. And what is most important to them is knowing that they can, like, you know, expand Disney World and, like, not have to run in with, you know, have zoning problems in Orlando or whatever the fuck you have to have these politicians in your pocket for. And that's why they're backing these goons. And now when these goons actually, like, go beyond the usual level of shitty Republican behavior to, like, super extra special levels of shitty Republican behavior, then they're just kind of like, well, we bought Fox, so yay, we made Pose, I guess we're good.
Who earns? Well, you guys, as you know, I have one transition line I use, and that line is, speaking of movies, Renee Zellweger studied law at UCLA during her hiatus from movie stardom. Movie stardom, all one word. I don't know if you knew this, and I don't know if Iffy Wadaway knew this, even though he, of course, is on record as being the world's number one fan of the motion picture Judy, but... before starring in Bridget Jones's Baby and said Judy, Renee Zellweger took a 6-year break from acting. On the Today Show this week, she said that one of the things she did during that time was study public policy and international law at UCLA. She said she was just really interested in the subject and needed to spend some time learning about things not related to her work in Hollywood. Is this important? Do you care?
Do we think that people on the USC campus are so jaded about...
UCLA, sorry.
The UCLA campus are so jaded about celebrities being, you know, in the heart of the entertainment industry that Renee Zellweger could just show up and, like, audit these courses or whatever and nobody cared? Or do we think there was, like, one class where everybody got a selfie and then they all had to shut up and leave her alone?
Alonzo, you don't know that she didn't wear one of her fat suits to go to these classes.
That's true. Who could recognize her?
She is a master of disguise. If the disguise is being a slightly overweight woman.
Yes, apparently, because no actually slightly overweight actresses could play the truth about Pam Lady.
What were they going to do? Like, hire someone who actually looks like that? Come on, you gotta.
We aren't talking about that. She's doing the press junket right now because she's on a new true crime show called The Truth About Pam, based on Pam Hupp, who's, it's bonkers. If you don't remember for a few years ago, please Google it and have your mind blown. And she does look very much like her in a fat suit, but we could do an entire episode on actors in fat suits, which is definitely important, and I care, and it's nonsense. I can't get too into it now because, you know, it's not a movie. But you know what? Sadly, we'll definitely get a movie in the pipeline soon enough another beautiful, super skinny ass woman is like, oh no, I can only look like a real person if I pad myself. I'm certainly also not going to cast a person who looks like that.
Oh, she's so brave. So brave.
Can I tell you my favorite thing about this story?
What?
And please. It's not the idea of Renee Zellweger sitting at different dinner tables trying to talk about international law and public policy with people. It is that within the same article, it said, during her self-imposed six-year hiatus, she enjoyed living under the radar, which included spending time on a farm in Connecticut, at a beach house in the Hamptons, and her home in Santa Barbara. And I was like, bitch, why'd you come back? Like, you just described the best retirement I've ever heard.
If you're going to seclude, you know, do it right.
Right. Do it three different area codes.
Do nothing bi-coastally. That's how you do it.
Yes. Well, you know, we're going to digitally seclude for a second. But when we come back, you know we're talking about After Yang. So stay right there.
Most game shows quiz contestants about topics they don't even care about.
But for 100 episodes, the Go Fact Yourself podcast has asked celebrity guests trivia about topics they choose for themselves.
And introduced them to some of their personal heroes along the way.
Oh my gosh.
Shut up.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to cry.
Oh my stars. I'm so, so excited to meet you.
Join me, J. Keith Van Stratton.
And me, Helen Hong, along with special guests DJ Jazzy Jeff and Faith Saley, plus some amazing surprise experts on the 100th episode of Go Fact Yourself.
And join us twice a month, every month, for new episodes of Go Fact Yourself here on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiwe. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Nancy Wong Yin,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And well, our movie today premiered at Cannes, and we've been looking forward to talking about it, especially since it screened at Sundance earlier this year. It's written and directed by Coco Nada and stars Colin Farrell, Jodie Turner-Smith, Justin H. Min, and a 10-year-old Malia Emma Chandrawijaya. Drea, would you care to provide us a brief summary of After Yang?
Sure. We jump into After Yang and we are immediately in some sort of futuristic, beautiful. Everyone has these fantastic houses with all these plants and greens. And we meet a family with a mother, a father, a young daughter, and a much older son. And then we realize the son is not only the caretaker of the daughter, but in fact, a robot. And he very quickly becomes ill and shuts down. And in the father's attempt to go and get him fixed or repaired, he starts a journey of realizing that this robotic part of their family named Yang, and who had been brought in because their daughter is adopted and of Chinese descent, and he was specifically chosen to help connect her with her Chinese culture. And in the journey of what the father discovers, trying to get him fixed and then trying to sort of dig a little deeper, it's revealed that he's been storing all of these memories and capturing things and lived a much broader and deeper life than he ever imagined. Leading the father to have to, actually every member of the family to have to really look and identify both what their connection is to Yang, how they think of Yang, and Yang's humanity and how Yang thought of it himself. After Yang.
Yes. After Yang. Yes. Well, Nancy, you recently wrote a piece for Elle about what the movie has to say about Asian identity. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts on that? And did those themes stand out to you right away?
Yeah, so I saw it first at Sundance, and I didn't know, I didn't know what to expect. And then I realized I actually had read the short story that it was based on a while back. Mm. And just watching it, I was just interested in that there was an Asian robot. I realized, I haven't seen a lot of movies, at least, you know, coming out of Hollywood that were Asian robots. And I knew that that the director is Korean-American, Koko Nara, and I was just fascinated by, you know, the concept and the title, right, is called After Yang. And interestingly, so I think the idea of androids and humanity is something that is, I think, very common, right, in terms of like Blade Runner or Ex Machina. Do, you know, these robots are obsessed with being human, but there was a beautiful and I think clever scene that really actually got me in the gut was when Colin Farrell's character asks Haley Lou Richardson's character, who turns out to be a friend of Yang that they didn't know about. And he asks her, you know, did Yang ever ask about, you know, wonder if he was human?
That's such a human thing to ask, isn't it? We always assume that other beings would want to be human. What's so great about being human?
And she, I think it's important because I forgot this in my, she's a clone.
Yes.
Which is another element of this that I forgot to, so thank you for letting me leapfrog that in. So yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And Jake, Colin Farrell's character, is anti-clone. So he's racist against clones, whatever that means, right?
Yeah.
And so, because they don't actually talk about race. So, you know, we have a multiracial family, right? With Colin Farrell, Jodie Turner-Smith, and then Malia Emma's character, who is Chinese. And so this blended family, but they don't actually talk about that too much. So anyway, so instead of saying, like, you know, she says that he's fine with, you know, being an android, but what he wondered is he Chinese?
He did question if he was Chinese.
He did.
What makes someone Asian? He'd ask that all the time.
And when I heard that, I was like, oh my gosh, isn't that the existential question for all Asians in the diaspora, right? And I got to hear Koko Nara actually talk about in a Q&A that he was very fascinated by the idea of manufactured Asianness, right? And that he said himself, like, you know, when you're away from your birthplace or your history, that you can't, that everything's constructed in some way. And I just really appreciated that kind of, and, you know, and that he infused that, I think, throughout the film.
Well, yeah, that kind of dovetails with, like, the architecture is very, seems very kind of, you know, Japanese influenced. Like, the Colin Farrell's mode of dress seems more Eastern than Western. He runs a tea shop and, in fact, is very traditional about it. At the beginning of the movie, somebody asks for tea crystals, whatever those are, which is some sort of future thing. And he's like, you know, no, strictly old school. Yes, I had to have a giant bowl of ramen when I got done with this movie because they eat it a lot in this film and made it look real appealing. It just kind of reminded me how, like, in A Clockwork Orange, for instance, you know, Stanley Kubrick Anthony Burgess presents this future world where, like, Russian influence has seeped into things like language and that kind of thing without ever getting into the specifics of what that world looks like and who's running it. And so this one, you have this sort of, like, visual reminders about Asian influence on Colin Farrell's character and the fact that he and his black wife have decided to adopt a Chinese girl. But without ever talking about, like, nobody talks about tariffs or anything, like, there's no bagging. It's just, it's right. Just there in the culture. And you just have to take it like, this is what the future looks like.
Well, even before it got to that scene, because the actor who plays Yang, who's incredible in this.
Justin H-Man.
Yeah, Justin H-Man. And I had to, I was like, he must have had the most incredible audition because he has these beautiful line readings. But many of us have had a crush on him since the Umbrella Academy. So I was like, the minute he showed up, I was like, A, goofy ass hair. B, that's the hot Korean American dude from Umbrella Academy. So when they said that he was there to teach her Chinese, I had this immediate like, oh my God, have I been misread what? Have I just and so then having that actually filter through of, oh no, I was like the Asian style robot and then planted all of this Chinese knowledge so that I could teach this young girl. Like that made it even more complex. And the other element that really spoke to me in Minnesota, where I'm from, I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but we have a really large population of, they're no longer kids, they're all my age, but a lot of my friends growing up were Korean kids being raised by white families. And like even the summer camp I worked at every year, 1 week of camp was Camp Chosun, and they would bring out like all, like we would have Korean co-staff and like be run. So it was this whole thing of like having all these white families trying to find ways to connect these kids with each other, with the culture that was so many millions of miles away seeming to them. And so I had such a interesting response to this of it really spoke to me on that. And as you guys know, like my sister was adopted, but by another white family. So it's, I didn't have like the race or culture things, but just the concept of like families built out of adoption and what that means and the work that goes into making kids feel loved and special in a way that often like biologically created kids, it's a non-issue. And this movie, like just in what we said in 5 minutes, the idea that it's like all of these heavy hitting, you know, philosophical quandaries and interesting emotional themes. And yet it's still like, it's a light narrative. You're like, just like, do you know what I mean? You're not watching this like with a notepad, like, ooh, this is a real strain, or how do I keep up with this sci-fi? It's just a world you are very easily in.
It opens with a banging dance number.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Ex Machina, I was like, do all robots dance awesome?
Oh, no, this is way better than Ex Machina. Way better.
The only reason the Ex Machina one was good is because Oscar Isaac.
Sure. Yeah.
Obviously, oh, I'm going to get behind
that.
Well,
they introduce all of the characters through this dance, right? Yeah. And it's like Dance Dance Revolution, maybe kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it felt amazingly like entertaining. It was probably the best introduction like sequence I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, what we were talking about the future, and I was saying, you know, I definitely had to squeeze in this like idea of solar punk because, you know, that's the new kind of wave that all the Zennials are talking about, where like, you know, cyberpunk is this like dystopian future and solar punk is a more kind of optimistic outlook on the future. There's greenery. It uses solar power. And I definitely feel like this movie really tapped into it. This was a future that seemed fun and entertaining. I feel like if this was Black Mirror, that game that they were playing in would have this dark thing where it's like, if you lose, you die. But it was like, no, it was just like a fun moment with the family. And it was, what I really liked about it was it really got us into the like story in such an abrupt way, which is kind of how like a situation like that happens, right? You know, I feel like a movie that kind of is attached to like something bad happening, you have all this like lead up and then you get attached to the characters and then the bad thing happens. And then like now we have these emotions, but this movie starts and we're kind of learning about Yang through the family learning that he was more than who they thought he was, which I thought was very, just such an interesting way to like download a character in a film like this.
It's definitely, I think, you know, you hear the expression to look at the world through someone else's eyes, but like Colin Farrell literally gets to do that in this movie.
And that it's another take on memory and a beautiful use of how filmmaking can teach you about a concept or illuminate a concept in an interesting way, because we go back and, you know, the first thing we see in this movie is this family taking a portrait, like just a family picture. And Yang is the one setting up the camera and they're like, come on, guy, like, let's jump on. Let's get in on this.
He loves that old camera.
Come on, Yang.
1 second.
Don't forget to join us.
I will.
And then you go to that later on when Colin Farrell is like taking his magic carpet ride through Yang's memories. And then you see it from Yang's side, which we've certainly seen that in films before and talked about. Like, Iffy, longtime fan of Rashomon. So like, obviously, that's something that we've talked about. But this, they start to layer in this thing with memories and with the film of, you'll hear like, the same line delivered different ways, like in a few, like it's like watching just a few takes of something, and it starts to really play with, oh, which one's capturing the moment, which one is that person, which one is the person hearing them. And it's the smallest stuff. It's not like, I'm making it sound like very art house, but it's just those small things that are like, oh, this is fascinating that you're now making me think of all of this amazing, where this could lead.
And I think that the film, like, you think that on the surface, it feels like Colin Farrell is the lead, right? Because you're journeying along with him. But I feel like we're all curious about, like, along with Colin Farrell's character, Jake, about Yang, right? We want to know more about Yang. And it gets deeper and deeper. You see layers of him, things that are unexpected. Like, he has a friend that the friend that the family had no idea about.
Yeah.
And then that friend, I won't give anything away, but that friend is actually related to him in ways that she doesn't know. Right. So you realize the depth of this character. And that's something about, like, you know, the fact that Asian American characters, like someone like him, could have been easily just a side kind of token. Right. But instead, we actually find out, we go deep into so many things and we discover everything about the family through his eyes, even though it's through Colin's eyes that we see him. It's just, it's like you see both, right? You see them looking at Yang and then Yang looking at them.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's the ultimately the central mystery of the movie, and his presence and his absence both like have a huge impact on this family, which is why like he's the one in the title, you know.
The other, obviously, the strongest undercurrent to me, this movie is such a meditation on grief and how it hits people and how each member of this family is grieving Yang, and it's his body is still around, like he's plugged into something. They keep just casually talking about if they unplug him, he'll decompose. But he is, for all intents and purposes, dead. Like his core is dead or whatever, and he's not able to wake up, like all these things. And so how it hits them and how they each are processing their grief separately and how they feel things separately, which is very true of how people feel loss, but that it's also, again, interconnected with how much humanity they subscribe to Yang and how that changes as like they learn these memories or they learn this this background about him that they didn't know. Like they thought they got this brand new model that had only been around for 5 days before they got him, like hot off the presses. And what does it change of like what a life means? And you know, when we look at it, I mean, because he's, not to spoil it, he's played by a human being. So sorry for anyone who didn't know, he is played by an actual human. But because of that, he presents remarkably lifelike. So it is that thing that you're like, oh, we certainly don't live with tech that looks lifelike enough that I'm going to have moral, emotional, just a responsive.
You wouldn't cry if your Alexa died?
Oh God, if I had Alexa, maybe.
I would. Woo. Get on the train. Get on the train, Drea.
Yeah, my bad. Sorry, Alexa. But we're not there. But the idea of like, oh, how far along do you get with technology? And like Alonzo said, I thought that the Colin Farrell tea thing, it was this great combination of, it spoke to the Asian-ness, also modernity versus tradition versus these like long old school principles of if things are tangible and human, and if you're so rooted in that, like Colin Farrell's character is, maybe it takes him the longest to connect with a robot because he's the one who's like, I live in the past. The past is my jam.
But his past is based on a documentary he saw about tea.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up. That was so funny.
You get to hear his Werner Herzog impersonation.
I thought it was a great commentary on cultural appropriation, right?
That was great, yes.
Yeah, I saw this old documentary when I was in college. It was from the 20th century. It's about a man searching for the best tea in China.
China is where tea started.
Yes, I'm sure you have lots of interesting facts about tea in China.
I do. Would you like to hear some of them?
Maybe another time.
Here's Yang saying, like, I don't know if I'm Asian enough because I only have Chinese fun facts and I've never been there. I mean, Colin Farrell didn't even want to hear the Chinese fun facts. he can't even remember the name of the German who inspired him to get into tea. I mean, it is just like layers upon layers of, you know.
Colin Farrell was like, let me sweep aside my kimono and I'll sit down and talk to you about what I think about this.
I don't do tea crystals, but I got into tea because I watched a German documentary.
That is such a good point.
but there is something so analog about making tea. Like, I mean, you could literally like use wood to heat up the water. You know, like as far as things you can do in the kitchen, it is the mechanical level zero. You know, and so the contrast between that and this like super high tech robot who knows all these things and who, you know, is actually. I mean, and it's not even just that he's like, I mean, the scene where Yang talks to the daughter about grafting so that she doesn't feel like she's not connected to her parents, even though they're not her biological parents, is so beautifully done, beautifully written, but beautifully acted by Justin H. Min. And so it's like, you know, again, it's that thing sort of like with, you know, 2001 onward, like, who's the real robot here, you know, because he's in a lot of ways responding in a more human way than other characters in this movie do.
I was going to say, there was the scene where I write about it, where she speaks just in Mandarin, like she goes into Yang's empty room, speaks in Mandarin. No one, I mean, her parents don't understand her. So it's obviously she's just speaking and there's no subtitles and there's no translation. Right. And I speak Mandarin. And so I was listening to her and I felt like I was in on the secret, like in the theater. I felt like nobody else understands what she's saying. And she went on for a long time. Like she said, you know, I miss you. I'm sorry. I said I hated you and you're the best older brother ever. Like, you know, like a kind of eulogy. Right. And like nobody even knew what she said. And, you know, I loved that scene because I felt like here is, you know, the Kokonata is centering like the Asian language and the Asianness here, right? There's no need to translate it to English because somehow that's centered. So it was just, there was a balance there. And I just felt like that scene was like so special for me.
I loved that. And I want you to know I wept even though I didn't know what she was saying.
Yeah, that's a dream.
You guys know right that there. I do enjoy love a movie in a different with language no subtitles. With no subtitles.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, this is you went all through Coda, no subtitles. That is every time bold. I think about that, it makes me
I still thought it was an artistic choice and I supported that.
And this is like apropos of nothing, but just a thing I noticed. Over and over again, you see somebody when Yang has these memories of going to a concert, someone is wearing a T-shirt that says Lily Shushu, and there's actually a 2001 Asian American indie film called All About Lily Shushu about a pop singer.
Oh,
and
nice! So
I thought that was a cool little nod to the existence of that character in this movie. And if y'all haven't seen Columbus, I very highly recommend it.
I love
it.
Columbus.
Dave and I talk about this all the time. Directors who aren't afraid of quiet.
Yeah.
You know, because there's just so many movies you see that they, you know, especially like that are aimed at kids, but like, you see it in Marvel movies and a lot of other ones where like you can't have a moment where there isn't like music or dialogue or like effects, big explosion things happening. And he'll just go for these long stretches of characters like looking at things or standing by something. and tons of things are happening, but you're not, but it's there's a stillness there. And I think that there's a real confidence in filmmaking to do that in this day and age, because you know there's always some producers like, do we have to keep this part? Can we just cut to the next thing?
Yeah.
I feel like you looked at me when you said that, and you're not wrong. that does sound like me.
Yes, you're always like, get the next car chase and explosion, please.
Can we blow up, Yang? What's happening? Actually, speaking of Columbus, another low-key thing about this that I loved is he has such an eye for architecture and design, mm-hmm. and like above and beyond the, you know, we've been talking about the sort of like, it's that thing where there's Asian influence to the design, but it doesn't feel like that gross, like, did you get that at Cost Plus World Market? Like, it's like thoughtful. It's the whole world that they've done.
It's not orientalist.
Exactly. But he has all of these, like, the houses are designed with these beautiful, like, long, like, there's just long windowed walls and they're bisected moments. And he just shoots this space so artfully. Yeah, it blew my mind.
Like, and the composers are Japanese as well. So he used, this is why it's not kind of like, it feels like orientalist, because he's actually using real, you know, Asian artists and creatives.
That tracks. Mm. That definitely tracks.
Yeah, well, let's see how well it tracks, because now we've gotten to the part where we leave a review. You know, you've been here before, Nancy, Dr. Nancy. You know, we're going to go ahead and list it, screen it, stream it, or skip it. Drea, why don't you kick this off?
Obviously, I'm going to screen it. As you guys know, this is one of my favorites out of Sundance. I recommended this to every single person who was going to take in movies at the festival, and most of them were not able to see it there, so I'm thrilled it is available now.
Yeah.
I think it's just so special and thoughtful. You could watch this with so many people and talk about it. You could watch it by yourself and ruminate beautifully afterwards. Big fan.
Yeah, I'm a screener as well. I watched it on Showtime, which is where it is now available, and you can watch it from home. But at some point in the future, I would be thrilled to get to see this in a theater, because I think there's so much about the compositions and, like I said, the stillness that's really exciting about it. And this is also a movie I think that I will be watching more times. I think there's a lot to uncover here and a lot of subtleties to sort of glean from future viewings. I think there's going to be a lot that will be revealed along the way. Also, I just love the fact that the Sarita Chowdhury Express is really, you know, going hard this year. You know, she was the best thing about And Just Like That, and, you know, she's terrific here. We're about to get a Criterion release of Mississippi Masala, which was on the missing films list. So, you know, more of that, please.
And yes, she also dances in those opening credits with everybody
else. Oh, yes, she does.
So enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved her as she's like a techno sapien researcher.
Yes.
Yeah, so I saw it. I got to actually see it on the big screen, and I saw it streaming. And I would say, you know what? Both are good. Both are good. Just see it however you can. And again, like, yeah, everyone says, see it repeatedly, because I saw it the second time and I got other things right from it. And so it definitely has so much depth, because we talked about the Asianness, but there was a lot of talk about existence and a lot of existential questions.
Yes.
You know, thinking about the afterlife, and Yang was just like, so like, he would create more questions with his kind of questions. And it was, there's never ending, I think, streams of thoughts that can be generated from this film. So watch it repeatedly.
Yeah, I highly agree. You know, obviously you guessed it. I'm a screen it, you know, it looks great. Watch it however you can. I am calling it now, within the next year or so. This is going to be like the sci-fi dorks, you know, tentpole movie to feel smarter than most people and say that people don't get it if they don't like it, and that it, you know, it's just like it has everything I like. And usually when that happens, it has everything some, like, you know, condescending dork likes too. And but truly, I also plan to watch this multiple times, and not even just to like glean new things of it, but I really do like, you know, movies that have built great worlds, and like to really watch it and like really drink it in. I we tapped on it just for a second, but I really do love, just outside of everything, the world building aside, and just, I think, you know, we see so many movies in the future that is just so bleak, which is like, I get it, that like, it's good and refreshing to have this like optimistic take of like what we could have if, you know,
it's a great point.
We take a few, take away some of these private jets and, you know, I'm gonna stop there because I'm we'll be right back after we hear from another show from Maximum Fun. So don't go anywhere. It's about to get fun. I mean, it's already been fun.
It's the dramatic conclusion of Minority Corner with your host, James Arthur M. Yes, that's right. After 7 years,
this will be the end.
Will James and his guest co-host solve racism, homophobia, and sexism? Will James end his longtime feud with Jennifer Hudson? Will someone get married, turn out to be an evil twin? Will James and his guest co-host talk about news, pop culture, history, and all things nerdy? Probably. Yeah, that's probably the one that will definitely happen. Find out on the dramatic conclusion of Minority Corner right here on Maximum Fun or wherever you get your podcasts. Minority Corner, because together, we're the majority.
Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonzo Duraldi,
Nancy Wong Yoon,
Drea Clark.
And we've been talking about After Yang, and after After Yang, I think a lot more people are going to know the name Coconada. But Marissa's coming on with a quiz for us about some other one-named filmmakers.
Quiz time!
Woo! Yes, hello everyone. We've got a quiz for you today, and the theme is one-named filmmakers. I wanted to make it one-named directors, but I ran aground of the fact that there aren't that many one-named directors pretty quickly. So what we're going to do is I'll tell you beforehand if it's a director or I'm talking about a person who appeared in these films. I'm going to name some films, and as soon as you know who is the person with one name that did the thing in this film, you can buzz in with... What word will we use?
Yang.
The word will be Yang.
I want to honor him. I loved him.
Ugh, that Yang.
Him and his little bangs.
All right. Are we ready? I think that we should just be free for all. No need for teams.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. First, this person has directed the films I'm going to name. Black is King.
Oh, Yang.
Yang.
Alonso.
Beyonce.
That is correct.
Oh.
Is that what you were going to say, Ify?
It definitely wasn't. Let's keep going.
All right. This person has appeared in these movies. Ocean's 8. Raya, the Last Dragon.
Yang.
Damn it. Alonzo.
Aquafina.
That's right.
Oh, Ocean's 8. I just immediately thought of all of those dudes and was like, oh,
me too. Just one of these movies have a one name. Dudes too.
Why do y'all hate women so much?
I know, truly. Nancy, we're such a disappointment.
I know, this is Women's History Month and we're failing.
All right, this person is also an actor who has appeared in The Greatest Showman. That's how you say that, sorry. The Greatest Showman.
Yang.
God damn it.
Alonzo.
Zendaya.
I didn't even get to say Smallfoot. I was really excited about that.
Well, Zendaya is Michi. Exactly. We all know.
Also, it just hit me that, yeah, she only goes by Zendaya.
True.
Isn't it Zendaya? Yeah.
It is. Zendaya is
okay,
Michi.
At least Zendaya, I got that
sorry.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. It is that definitely counts. Zendaya. All right. We'll give you a bonus point, Nancy.
Partial point. That's right. Nancy.
Partial point for okay. Correct pronunciation.
So now 3 points for Alonzo and one for Nancy. All right. So, all right. This is a director who directed films like Charlie's Angels
Yang.
Full Throttle.
Yang.
Drea.
Yang. Mick G. Did I meet him 15 years ago in a strip club? I did. Yes, I did. Was he with Mark McGrath at the time? He was.
The fun part of this is me thinking, trying to imagine Dre at a strip club. Just like, oh
I spent a lot of time in the bathroom complimenting dancers.
Yep, that's that. There it is.
And asking about their lives. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's see if you met the next person in a strip club as well. They were an actor who appeared in Wanted, Suicide Squad, Just Right.
Oh, Yang.
Alonzo. No, dang it. Aw. Yep.
Common.
Common is the correct answer.
I truly was like, Queen?
I totally forgot he's in Wanted.
Queen Latifah? Do we slur that together?
They're getting just a little bit harder, just a
Common,
touch harder.
Common, damn it. I love right. you, Common. Just if you're out there, I love you.
Now, here we have someone who directed the films that I am going to name. W.E.
Yang.
Drea.
Madonna.
That is correct.
Old Madge herself.
That's right.
She directed a film?
She's directed two films. Was about Wallace Simpson and Edward King abdicating the crown.
I'll definitely hand out a bonus point if you can name the other movie.
It was the adaptation of
No. It was that the movie that they with the guy from it's called like Filth and something. Yeah. Filth and Wisdom, is that it?
Filth and Wisdom is
yes.
right.
When WE came
the
out,
the person who truly needed the extra bonus point.
When WE came out, they tried to pretend it was Madonna's first film, and it was like, no. It's all filth. We remember Filth and Wisdom. You're not. There's an internet, you know.
Okay. Well, how about we do one more question? What do you think?
Oh,
let's.
If you can't wait.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Edge of his seat.
I think we've moved out of the threshold where I had a chance. Once I lost Beyonce, it was a wrap.
All right. So here we go. This is the more names I say, the clearer the answer will be. So this is a performer who appeared in Julia and Julia, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and of course, David Lynch's Dune.
Zendaya? I can't.
No, David Lynch's Dune.
Oh, David Lynch's Dune.
Oh,
Yang, Iffy.
Sting.
Sting is the correct answer.
Yes. Iffy.
Good one.
All right. Amazing. Well, awesome. Alonzo, you are the clear winner there, but everybody comes away with points on the board. I'm so proud of you all.
I only have my Zendaya, which I'm going to just use in every answer.
You know, in this day and age, I think Zendaya is a safe answer.
I mean, it's a safe answer,
it's a good fallback,
right?
Yeah. When in doubt.
All right. Well, I will clear out here and let you guys get on with your show. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, producer Marissa.
You're welcome.
Yay, Marissa.
Yes. Okay. That was fun. I like that when I got a point. But now it's time for staff picks. It can be any movie at all. Andrea, why don't you start?
Okay. This one is for sure 5 minutes into After Yang. I was like, oh, this is hitting the exact same sweet spot as Never Let Me Go, which is a film by Mark Romanek. Alex Garland wrote the screenplay. It's an adaptation of an incredible book by Kazuo Ishiguro. And please know that I got to see a test screening of this. No, I saw an early screening where they spoke about the test screenings and said that they had to put a disclaimer at the top saying it was a work of fiction, because when they showed it to American audiences, they were really mad to find out that the Brits had been cloning people since the 50s. So please, it is beautiful and thoughtful and gives you that a similar sense of that kind of real life sci-fi, if that makes sense. It's like, oh,
it's like if Merchant Ivory had made Parts the Clonus Horror.
Right. Like, it's not like, ooh, hovercrafts and whatever. It is a future where there are new capabilities, and then we're looking at what does humanity mean with all of those. Never Let Me Go.
Ooh, I like that. That's a great, great take. Pick. I've been on Twitter too long. Nancy, do you have a staff pick for us?
You probably all already talked about this film, but Drive My Car.
We're about to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Talk about like a film that makes you think about all sorts of things. And also a film that like the trailer confused, like totally threw me off, because it had nothing to do really with a road trip and just an Asian kind of a pan-Asian even representation, like a play within a film. And I love Murakami, you know, where it's based on a short story. I guess all, like, just like After Yang is based on a short story, right? but this story is actually by someone who's Asian. And apparently the screenplay was based on multiple Murakami short stories and not just Drive My Car. So, because when I watched it, I'm a fan of the author. And so I recognized a lot of the themes. And it's like, I guess Burning was also based on another Murakami story. So it has that dream, like, you know, kind of, I can't even explain it. It's just such a different film, I think, than typical Hollywood films that I loved it. I just loved it so much.
It also looks at grief in a deep way, like After Yang does. Different way, but with the same.
Yeah, this one's a little bit sadder, but not devastatingly so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's currently streaming on HBO Max. And so,
yes, now everyone can see it.
Exactly.
Yes.
If that's one of the Oscar nominees, you thought it's ever going to open near me. Well, now you can
see it. Yeah, I'm warning, it's like 3 hours long. So,
yes.
Yeah. Well, and literally missed a flight back to LA watching The Batman. So, the least I could do is sit through another 3 hours. But thanks for letting me know, because now I know to watch that earlier.
yes. So, we're not all sitting here looking at our watches, wondering when the show's going to start.
Yeah.
I got 10 more minutes.
All right. Alonzo, what's your pick?
My set pick is actually a physical media release. Cohen Media. The day that we're recording this is putting out. It's new this week. It is a Blu-ray featuring a beautiful 4K restoration of what I think is a very important 1970s indie movie called Hester Street. It's about immigrants in New York at the turn of the century and ones who are very happy and eager to assimilate to the ways of the New World, and those who are maybe a little more interested in kind of clinging to the ways, the religion and the language that they left behind. This was a truly independent film made for a very low budget. Director Joan Micklin-Silver, who I'm a huge fan of, and I think we don't talk about her enough as a really important pioneering American indie filmmaker. She and her husband raised the money, made this film. Nobody wanted to release it. They thought it was, you know, too ethnic. It was too much of it was in Yiddish.
Was it too urban?
It was, too urban, like literally in Brooklyn. But, you know, they got into the Cannes Film Festival. Carol Kane got a Best Actress nomination for her work in the film. And it made a huge profit because they made it so cheap and it wound up doing really well. And I have been tooting the horn for Joan Micklin-Silver for years. She passed away a few years back, but I think she's super influential, and I'm really glad that Cohen Media, first they restored her film Between the Lines a few years ago, which you can, I think, now watch on the Criterion Channel, and now we've gotten this beautiful new restoration of Hester Street, which got a theatrical release and is now on Blu-ray, and I highly recommend that you check it out. She's just a really great filmmaker, and this is, I think, a really terrific story about how people adjust to the United States or don't, and about, you know, maybe sort of finding a medium between the land you've left behind and the one you're adopting.
Mm. I'm going to close it out in the most, predictable way. You know, I saw The Batman this weekend. I did miss my flight forward. And, you know, aside from a few things that could have, you know, could have used a punched up, maybe a reshoot. I did enjoy Matt Reeves' take on The Batman. It's a exciting take on The Batman. It is a detective movie. But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. But I tweeted this after. Now what I yearn for is a very optimistic, fun, bright Superman, because it reminded me this Batman reminds me of the dark and grittiness of like the animated Batman series, and I loved when it would, you know, be paired with the Superman animated series, which was bright and hopeful, and give it to a director who will do that. We've seen dark, we've seen gritty.
Give us a Metropolis that doesn't look like Gotham City.
Thank you. Please, I beg. But that's all there is to that. Nancy, thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get up out of here?
Oh, I got into a speakers bureau today, Outspoken Agency. So I am ready and willing to come and speak for Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month. And so that's
book
exciting.
This woman.
Yes. I know. And people can follow you on Twitter at
Nancy WYUEN. Everywhere,
which I would recommend.
Instagram and Twitter. Yes, yeah. I used to live solely on Twitter during the pandemic. Now I actually do leave the house to watch After Yang.
Congrats. Yes, bravo.
And you've joined us in the pit of podcasting, I understand.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I host. I just hosted my first season ever of a podcast called The Disruptors. And I got to interview people like Jean Luen Yang, Minjin Lee, Olivia Leung. Kung Fu is actually dropping today, right? I think the series. And so, yeah, it's been awesome. We talk about faith and culture.
Great. Oh, that's so dope. Well, yeah, go check that out. You already look, if you're listening to this, you already like podcasts. Why don't you have another time?
We hope.
Dre and Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. And you, listener, thank you for listening. And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
Yay!
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.